his command. It's not just control with him. His ability to paint is very rare for any pitcher, let alone one as young as he is.
As each level goes up, the book gets out on you, there's tons more video, and the pitchers are better at executing their game plan against you.
If you want the manager to reset the lineup in the ninth inning, you hate baseball. That's a fundamental change to the game.
Yeah.
And welcome to Artificial Turf Wars, episode number 96, where we've run out of places to put all these April wins. I had all these containers ready, very specific number, and I'm out. So we'll see what happens. I'm happy to be joined tonight by Joshua Howsam. Josh, how are you this evening?
I'm good.
Your boy Marco Estrada, as we record this, has already left the game far earlier than I think you would have preferred.
Yeah, he looked awesome for three innings, and then he just fell apart.
Stuff happens. But the stuff has added up to a 4-2 record since we last talked to you folks, so I'm reasonably happy about that. Aaron Sanchez and Roberto Osuna have had reasons to be happy that we'll get into. Jay Happ is a strikeout artist. Who knew? Marcus Stroman is a walk machine. Who knew? And the top-heavy Jays lineup is, I don't know if that's a problem or not. I don't know if Kendrys Morales' absence is going to make that better or worse. And the Jays really like to hit the later rather than sooner. We're going to talk to Jesse Goldberg Strassler, the voice of the Lansing Lugnuts. We have your questions as always. And another observation that Rob Manfred still hates baseball. We shall begin. 4-2, Josh. How bad? I mean, were we expecting 4-2, really?
And one of those losses is the end of that White Sox series. Maybe. I mean, the Rangers and Orioles are really bad.
Should the Rangers be really bad, though? I mean,
their pitching sucks.
Okay, fair. The Orioles.
Yeah, you can see that offense eking out some wins. I mean, they got one, right?
Yeah. And the Orioles are currently poised to get another one. But who knows? It's only one run apart. But last year, I just, even with the relative strength of the teams and everything else, I don't think I ever saw the Jays sweeping in Baltimore, even in my mind. And now I'm like, eh, that's probably doable if everything breaks right.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. The feel last year was that everything that was going to go wrong did. And this year, it's like, maybe things can go right.
Yeah. We'll get into some of the people I have been pleasantly surprised by, but first we should really acknowledge both the performance in the short term of Aaron Sanchez and then in the long run of Roberto Osuna. So first, Sanchez, although he did not have per se his control last night, seemed to have everything else going his way with seven full innings of no hit ball.
Yeah, it was really interesting too because his velocity was well down. He topped at 94, I believe, sitting 91, 92, 93, but he was just ridiculous movement, and that changeup, it's become a real weapon for him. He threw, I think, his 40 of them last night.
That's a silly number of changeups. That's a Marco Estrada number of changeups, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what I saw tweeted. I don't know how accurate that number actually is, but either way, he was throwing a whole bunch, and he gets a lot of swings and misses and very weak contact on them.
And there was a lot of tail on a lot of his pitches last night that you don't see every time. I mean, he's a guy who has great sink, but there was a little extra wrinkle last night, and then the Orioles hitters had huge problems with it.
They really did, and even the first hit was not really a hit.
Devin Travis going out into the outfield, nearly killing Steve Pierce to save the no-hitter early. That would have been the moment, right, had the no-hitter come to pass.
Yeah, and Pilar made a really nice play too. It was the defense always has to step up in a potential no hitter, but you know, it was really fun to watch.
It was indeed. It was, and I think, you know, Aaron Sanchez, of course, says all the cliche things about his game only getting better and everything else. But the fact that he's not talking about having to leave early or his finger getting aggravated or, you know, other problems, if his focus really is on the technique, the performance, that's a really good sign for the Blue Jays because it means Sanchez could be in 2016 form.
Right. Yeah, I mean, the stuff and the talent we knew were there. So it was just all about whether he was going to still be there.
So far, so good. So I enjoy watching Aaron Sanchez. I don't enjoy that he's completely ruined my nickname for him, but I still enjoy him and his extremely high-waisted pants.
Okay.
Roberto Osuna. We heard youngest player in the major leagues for, of course, the first almost 2 years he was in the league. He was the youngest player in the major league, so we heard that a lot. Now we get another youngest player, too, which was...
reach 100 saves.
Woo! Round numbers. Aren't they cool?
They are cool. You know, and, you know, it's interesting because... for him, especially, because it means money, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, every one of those he racks up is something he can take into arbitration to show his consistency. And it also doesn't help that, you know, in a way, a starting pitcher at least starts with a chance of 32 wins every year, even though that's a very flawed statistic. In his mind, right, if I was out and I was perfect every time 32 times, I'd end up with 32 wins. There's no guarantee for a relief pitcher how many saves he's going to get. If the team wins a lot of blowouts, that's just the way it is for him. So you need a very specific kind of team in order to keep racking up saves at a steady rate.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And you know, I mentioned how it's like we're talking about this money, right? But from our perspective, prior to Osuna, I guess the last guy that was actually comfortable, it's like, the, you know, we can likely hold this lead, was BJ Ryan?
People have made a statement that Casey Jansen had a period of reliability.
He did. I shouldn't take that away from him. Jansen was actually quite solid, but it was, wasn't the same.
No, he was not a dominant closer. He had good control, as I recall. Velocity was not dominant. There was no killer out pitch that you were expecting him. You know, you see Houston Street coming to the game for another team, you know you're going to see 1,000 sliders. You see Mariano Rivera come in, and you know it's going to be cut this way and cut that way, and everybody's going to look stupid. And you see Roberto Osuna come into the game, you know it's going to be in the zone, and they're going to have to hit his best. And his best, even with the reduced velocity, has been remarkably good and hard to hit. Relative to your average guy.
And it helps out his command. It's not just control with him. His ability to paint is very rare for any pitcher, let alone one as young as he is.
Yeah, and I think that speaks to him being in a baseball family and starting his career professionally, quote-unquote, at like 16 years old in Mexico. I think he was taught to do that by, you know, taught that that was most important by his family.
Yeah, I think you're right there. I mean, we're going to discuss some of the bloodline stuff with Jesse Goldberg-Strassler later on, but I think that it definitely played a part. And in his case, when you've got the stuff too, I mean, you know, his fastball is sitting above 95 again this year, although he's not hitting those 98, 99s. With that slider and that cutter, if you could throw those where you want them, it's really, really tough to hit.
Yeah, and again, he had a changeup when he started, and we don't even see the changeup anymore. so you kind of wonder if he had to mix it up, could he reinvent something if something wasn't working for him? And other than, you know, doing something silly like going to a sinker that doesn't work, I think there's a lot of potential for him to adjust as time goes on. So, you know, here's to hopefully, you know, another 100 saves in a Blue Jays uniform. We'll see if he can pull it off.
Mm-hmm.
Other guys who have had notable performances, you wanted to talk about J-Hap and strikeouts, which is not 100% a J-Hap thing normally.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely not what you think of initially when you talk about J-Hap, and it's something he's done, and he's usually around 8 to 9 in his best stretches, but you know, as Blue Jays fans, we haven't really seen that. And then this time, it's like he's got 18 strikeouts in his last 11 in the third, which is absurd.
And I understand some of that is whatever Jay Happ's doing. I also look around, though, the league, and it, you know, I always kind of hope that the strikeouts will level off. And I feel like I'm hoping against hope here, and that's never going to happen because the penalty for striking out is just, you know, in this launch angle conscious era and the big swing era and the hit the ball hard era, whatever you want to call it, striking out doesn't seem to be a concern of any of the hitters. Like any of the hitters, there's no contact guy in the lineup anymore. So we get possibly a less entertaining game overall.
Yeah, and that's definitely true. I was actually talking to some of my friends about that when I was down in Dallas this past weekend. That same idea. It's like the games to watch are just not as fun.
No, because nothing insane happens when a guy strikes out or hits a home run. Right? Home runs are fun, don't get me wrong. But when someone hits the ball and it kicks off somebody's foot and then goes straight to the third baseman and then he's flipping it somewhere, you know, that only happens when the ball is in play. Inside the park home runs only happen when something ridiculous happens in the outfield. And there's less and less opportunity for that as we keep going forward.
Yep. And anyway, but back to Hap. It's been interesting, though, in the last couple of games, how he's been sort of altering his pitch mix with more four-seamers against the Orioles, more sinkers against the White Sox. So I think there's a real conscious effort to get these swings and misses based on the profile of the hitters he's facing. You know, a lot of these Orioles, they like the ball down low, so he's throwing these high, high fastballs, and they were just going over their bats, whereas a lot of the White Sox hitters, they swing at these high pitches. So I think that, you know, with the usage of, you know, with Martin and Walker and the way they understand pitching and his ability to get that variation on his fastball, these swings and misses could be something we see a bit more of.
This is not the first time we have seen the chameleon Jay Happ, right? He did something with Pittsburgh in order to be successful. And when the Jays got him the second time, it was an expectation that he'd continue that. And then he completely flipped the script and he was successful anyway.
Yeah, no, he started throwing sinkers after becoming super successful by not throwing sinkers with the Pirates. But and we've seen this even from start to start with the Blue Jays, where eventually he'll level off at some point. But his fastball usage just goes way up and down depending on the team he's facing. And it actually makes him one of those guys that just typically is better than his stuff looks.
Indeed. He's trying to tailor his stuff. So that's interesting. Although I don't think you're right. I don't think, you know, 13 Ks or 14 Ks per nine, whatever he's sitting at, that doesn't seem to be sustainable. In the same vein, Marcus Stroman in Texas did not look like there were any seams on the baseballs he was throwing whatsoever in terms of grip.
I mean, so this game, I went down to Texas for this series. I left early because it was so freaking cold.
Wow. That's a statement right there.
Yeah, I mean, the game sucked too, and so did Stroman. But, you know, it would be just, I could just dismiss that as, well, a bad game. But he also struggled with command in his first outing against the Yankees. Now, again, it's just two starts. He had an abridged spring training. But it's going to be something to watch, at least in the early going of the season.
Yeah, I mean, that seems like it would be an outlier because the conditions were so horrible, but we'll find out how many days? When is his next start?
His next start would be Friday.
Friday. We'll probably have a better idea Friday, unless it's like 0 degrees at game time again. I was observing from last night's game where the Jays managed to eke out that 2-1 victory to save Aaron Sanchez's effort. That the top four hitters in the lineup at that point had reached base 9 times. I think the entire team had reached base, I'm not sure, 13 times. So, I mean, it's good to bunch up your good hitters, but you can't survive necessarily long run with four guys who are doing everything.
Yeah. I mean, it's tough to say. We've seen top heavy lineups with the Jays before, and it helped that, you know, Aledmys Diaz is back from his minor back spasm. He just hit another home run. If he can get hot again, that'll change this a little bit. But essentially, once it gets past the 5 hole, this lineup has just been a disaster. Morales was terrible. Martin, Pilar has cooled off dramatically. And then Grichuk has just been it's hard to discuss how bad Grichuk has been.
Yeah, there have been, I guess this is as good a time as any to talk about people who've pleasantly surprised and unpleasantly disappointed. And Aledmys Diaz looked like, before he hurt himself a little bit, looked like he was really going to have a good week in terms of how he was seeing the ball. He's played what I would view as very adequate defense.
Yeah. I mean, they just screwed up a double play, but I think that he's looking a lot more like... Actually, it was Gifted and Gopi that screwed up anyway. He's looking a lot more like the Diaz that Jays were hoping to get as opposed to the one that they got.
Oh, yeah, and the Jays
as opposed to the one that people thought they were going to get.
They have turned more double plays than anybody else in the league, so they get to screw one up once in a while, I guess, just in the on sheer volume. Yengervis Solarte has been a walk machine, which I don't remember that being a part of his advertised package, but he's also showed a bunch of pop, has played a slightly below average third base, but filled in, you know, as best as could be expected when Josh Donaldson had a couple of days where his arm had apparently died, which was cool to see. And John Gibbons apparently likes him, keeps trying to get his bat into the lineup because it's been effective. And Curtis Granderson has done exactly what you were hoping his half of the platoon would do. And Steve Pierce has certainly made himself noticed as the very first pitch home run in Texas would tell you. So all of those guys, some new and definitely role players, they haven't, other than Randall Grichuk, who has been, yes, hard to describe bad. They look like the kind of additions we planned or the management planned on getting out of them.
Serviceable players. Agree. Right. And even with Grichuk, and you look at some of these at bats, he's missing pitches that are right down the middle. And that's not something he did a ton of when he was playing for St. Louis. I mean, his plate discipline was poor, but he was swinging pitches out of the zone. Whereas, so it shouldn't be this bad going forward, essentially what I'm trying to say here. Eventually, he'll start hitting those pitches that are over the middle for home runs or doubles as opposed to pop-ups and swinging through them.
Now, on the flip side here, on the pitching side, John Axford is in the process of pouring some gasoline on the mound and having a little barbecue.
Well, ish. This is what I'm talking about. Is botched double play, squeaker through the shift, and then a ball that was hit about 30 miles an hour that got through the infield. He's pitching fine. He's just not getting outs.
He has not had there's been no one in the bullpen in terms of blowing anybody away, though. Both Axford and Clippard have all looked, pardon my saying so, pedestrian, and you can tell by how readily John Gibbons goes to his Barnes and Tapera at every possible opportunity when the game is close.
Yeah, I mean, it's their returns have not been that great, but I think Clippard's been a little better than the other two guys, but I'm willing to see what happens as the weather warms up a little bit with some of those guys, because the velocity's down for Clippard and O.
Maybe they didn't bring the velocity from Florida from spring training. They left it in that other suitcase. All right, so that goes around the horn with, yes, the Blue Jays did add many of the things that they promised they would add, which is cool. It has resulted that this weird lineup, though, does come to life at the weirdest times. What is it with the 7th, 8th, and 9th innings?
The Blue Jays own them? I know. They own relievers. I mean, it's absolutely nuts what has happened with their splits. They're against starting pitchers. They're hitting .220. This is entering today. I don't have today's stats here. .224 with a .310 on base and a .376 slugging.
Ugly.
Yeah. Against relievers, the batting average isn't low. Isn't that great? Actually, the overall numbers are not that bad. .722 OPS, but it's still 40 OPS points higher against relievers. It's supposed to be the other way around.
Yeah, because relievers are coming in to put out the fire that the starter couldn't handle because he's worn out. But that's not what's been happening.
That was just in the last week. That was not over the entire season.
The Blue Jays have scored more runs after the 7th, 8th, and 9th, I think, than any team in, I believe, the American League. I can't remember the stat. I'm sorry. I don't have my infographic up. But yeah, it's not an illusion. They really do come to life late. And they did it, even though they didn't do it with a lot of runs last night, they got in the last laugh with a Granderson home run right at the tail end of the game. Like, when you really need it, all of a sudden the runs are there. It's been very strange.
Yeah. On the broadcast, Buck and Pat were talking about how they're extra focused. No, that's not.
They're lucky.
And they have good hitters. I mean, so the numbers overall aren't that good. But if you have guys with power, especially, which has been a big part of it, it's like Donaldson's grand slam. You know, if they run into one late, it's going to stand out more than if they did a home run in the second inning.
Well, and this is part of that. Things are not as entertaining as they used to be in the sense of you don't know what's going to happen because the guys with power late drive in a bunch of runs. You know, it's not like you need six hits strung together to score two or three runs. You need a walk, a hit, and a bomb, and all of a sudden the game's blown wide open, which is exactly what happened in that Donaldson game. You know, well, I think I'm one walk short in my description. So I don't think that's necessarily going to continue, but I don't think their struggle against starters should necessarily continue either. This does seem like a team that is going to continue to score runs because they have a lot of parts that, at least some of them that are really cold right now, should heat up as the other ones cool down, right?
Yeah, I think that's to be expected. I mean, Russell Martin, he's started slow the last couple of years, actually. So I expect him to hit a little bit better. Like Grichuk, like we said, just can't hit worse. I mean, he's just been terrible. And then Travis has been awful, too. Travis's slight OPS is 257.
I don't know what's wrong with Travis. I think he's in his own head, to be honest. And I think Grichuk, with an 0 for 26, was probably not, you know, mentally where he was supposed to be either. So maybe he can relax a little bit. But yeah, both of those guys have looked really, really bad. And then the night where Sanchez had his great night, there were two pitches on the corner, one on the inside corner, the other one on the outside corner, that struck out Travis. And it was like, do you really need to be doing that to him? He's got enough problems.
Well, he's also been getting himself out a lot, too. You know, he's swinging at first pitch. The number of times I've seen him swing at the first pitch on a ball in off the plate and pop it up to second base.
Yeah. Again, I think he's in his own head. He's trying to be aggressive and attack, and he's not really paying attention to what he's attacking. And he's a better hitter than that. We've seen it for 2 years. We know what he's a better hitter.
Right. And so that was just more my way of agreeing, essentially. It's like there's something mentally going on there. So a couple days off here should be good for him.
All right. We are going to move away from current events to future events. Is that possible? We're going to go talk to Jesse Goldberg-Strassler. He is very familiar with the Lansing Lugnuts, but also familiar with many of the people who have passed through Lansing on their way to the big leagues. We're going to talk about all of that with him coming right up. And we are, once again, happy to bring back Jesse Goldberg-Strassler, the voice of the Lansing Lugnuts and jack-of-all-trades around the stadium, as I understand it. Jesse, are you having a busy day?
You know what? No. Currently, because we had an 11 a.m. game, so it was an early wake-up call, but after the game ends and after all my post-game work concludes, it was 4:30, and I said, I've got a free evening at my disposal, so it feels like I'm having a half day.
Sweet. And then we ruined it by asking you to come talk to us.
This is not work.
Awesome. Awesome. So the reason we are talking to you this week is because we have to wait a little bit after the major league season begins for the minor league season to get going. And if you're in Buffalo, apparently you have to wait even longer. But you're not in Buffalo. You're in Lansing. You started on time, I believe. Who are the new faces at Lansing who you are surprised, pleased to see show up on your roster?
Oh, you know what? Looking at it on paper, I'd been reading about a lot of these guys and simply saying, Ryan Noda won the Appy League Player of the Year last year. Let's see what he's got. Casey Clemens is the favorite, has the famous last name. What has he got? Samad Taylor was the big trade piece. Him and Thomas Pannone. What can he show me? And looking right on down the roster, the first thing that occurred to me was because Vladdy and Bo cast such a big shadow, that we have the opportunity in Lansing for a lot of these guys to play without the spotlight so heavy on them and to establish themselves as prospects. If one, two, three, four of these guys do very well, they can break out. The opportunity is there. So that was my thinking going into the year, was who is going to separate themselves. And now that we're a week out of the season, we're 7 days into the season, I can tell you that Samad Taylor is big-time power for a second baseman. He homered to 412 feet to center field today. that Casey Clemens is a superlative defensive first baseman, and he and Ryan Noda have quality at-bats every time they step in.
That's interesting. It's everywhere we go, we seem to hear the sons of major leaguers. And you always kind of wonder, usually those the reasons we know the sons is because the father was, you know, incredible in a lot of cases with, you know, Biggio and Guerrero. But Clemens is kind of weird because he's, I guess he's following in his father's footsteps in baseball, but he's not a pitcher.
I can add in, too, the guys that you wouldn't realize, but Ryan Borucki's father was a minor leaguer. DJ Davis's father was a minor leaguer. William Ouellette. There are other guys who, just because their dads didn't make the major leagues, didn't do great things, they grew up in baseball. But for Casey Clemens, the amazing story is he was a really great high school pitcher, and then he tore his labrum. And still he went to Texas, and he was the Saturday starter for the Longhorns until he strained his elbow. And they told him going into his junior year, you can't pitch anymore. It was taken away from him. His body wouldn't allow it. And so he reestablished himself as a first baseman, and he was the Texas Longhorns as a senior offensive player of the year. And he gets taken in the eighth round. If he didn't have the famous last name, you'd think of him as a senior sign. But he is a very good defender. And not only that, each time up, his plate discipline has been excellent. He bombed a long home run for us on Sunday. If you stripped away that last name from his jersey and just said, hey, here's a big first baseman out of Texas who's a left-hander who can really pick it at first base, you'd say, this is a really interesting guy.
So when it comes to these players with the, you know, the well-known bloodlines or even the ones that aren't, like Brocky and you mentioned, in your dealings with the players, when you speak to them, if you speak to them much, I guess you would in your roles, have you found that there's a difference in the way they are with the media or even with what you've seen with them with fans or just on the field because of their experience growing?
No, not one bit. And I can even go beyond that with all three of these guys. And I want to highlight first Vladdy Jr. and Casey. Just a week in, I can tell they're great teammates. Bo Bichette was so young and very much he was trying to help out with his teammates, but Vladdy Jr. was the center of attention and his charisma is off the charts. And now here's Casey just bubbling with confidence and bubbling with enthusiasm. And I think that the worry, if you're a teammate of these guys, or maybe you're me, you're saying, okay, he grew up in privilege. He grew up with his father, a celebrity. How's he going to react to being around everybody else? And all three of them fit right in. And that to me is the really great thing is, I don't think that there is a difference between any of these guys and you take another one, a Kevin Vicuña or a Juan Kelly. They feel like they're just another one of the guys.
So you've alluded to those two names several times already, completely unprompted. Your star attraction for the Lugs last year was undoubtedly the duo of Bo and Vlad, and they left you before the end of last season. But what do you think about them now that they've moved on and you can see in New Hampshire that they are capably off to a good start, both of them?
Well, they're doing the same thing that they did in Lansing, aren't they? Vladdy's hitting just basically about the same thing he did in Lansing and crushing doubles and every now and then crushing back-to-back games with home runs. And there's Bo just getting base hits and batting .390 in his sleep. That, to me, is amazing that at every level that they've gone to, they've played the exact same way.
Yeah, that's not supposed to happen, though. They're supposed to be, at some point, the challenge is supposed to be like, oh, okay, this is where he hit the wall, or this is where he had to pause and learn the league or learn a specific skill to get over to the next hump. And so far, they've really not cared for the speed bumps.
I would separate two different factors. I'd say, on one hand, there are the reps that are really helping them out. We can see their offensive numbers. We don't see how they're growing, let's say, as base runners, or let's say as teammates, or let's say in the field, where they are really being drilled in various things that they need to improve in order to be major league caliber. But what we can see is at the plate, as each level goes up, the book gets out on you, there's tons more video, and the pitchers are better at executing their game plan against you. And so the pitchers get together with the catchers, get together with the pitching coach, and before the series starts and before each game, they say, here's how we're going to pitch Guerrero. Here's how we're going to pitch Bichette. And every single level, the pitchers come in with a plan, and it doesn't stop them. That, to me, is the most admirable thing.
Now, and taking it away from those guys for a second, but still sticking with the idea of players that aren't in Lansing, what is your thought on the Blue Jays they seem to do this now with some frequency. These guys, the college draftees, they send them to Vancouver, and then they skip them right over Lansing to Dunedin. This happened with Warmoth, Pearson, and with Riley Adams this year.
Well, I think it's early. It's very early. I see Riley Adams has gotten off to a cold start. I see Logan Warmoth has gotten off to a cold start. We're waiting on Nate Pearson. If they excel, so much the better for them. Marcus Stroman skipped right over Lansing on his way up to the major leagues. Adam Lind skipped over Lansing on his way up to the major leagues. And there have been several others, too. We never saw Adani Echevarria. There are others who I'm forgetting. That the Blue Jays get him in, you get him into that Vancouver atmosphere, which is wonderful. And Vancouver could answer right back at me, hey, we never saw Vladdy Jr. He went from Bluefield to Lansing. But in spring training, especially that Dunedin facility that you've got all your people right there, that's really great for the Blue Jays, that they can work right with a Nate Pearson or Logan Warmoth or Riley Adams, that they're right on hand. Now, let me offer you a contrast. A couple of years ago, Ryan Barucki skipped over Lansing, went from Vancouver to Dunedin, and he struggled. He was there about a month and a little bit. I think he made 6 starts, and it was not good. And so they sent him back down to Lansing. They gave him the Lugnuts experience, and they told him, get your confidence back, dominate the league. It would not surprise me if, for example, we went into May, we went into June, and Riley Adams was still having trouble, that they told Riley, go back to Lansing, dominate a bit, and get that confidence back up. And I separate Riley from Logan Warmoth in this. Catching is tough. Max Pentecost, et cetera, Danny Jansen. It's tough to be a really good offensive catcher because so much of your time is monopolized by your defense and by working with pitchers, where you have to put your own ego aside because your coach just said, hey, we need side sessions. We need a catcher. Get out there, strap on the equipment. Whatever you're doing just has to wait. So I'm eager to see how Riley adjusts. And with Logan Warmoth, we'll see, but he was one of the top college shortstops in the country. He should be okay. For us, let me transition quickly. Because Warmoth is in Dunedin, that has opened things up in Lansing for both Kevin Vicuña and for Kevin Smith to play shortstop, splitting time. That's been great. They love Vicuña, and Kevin Smith has just come rolling out of the blocks and crushing the baseball this year. If Warmoth had started in Lansing, Kevin Smith might not have made a full season team and might have had to start with Vancouver. The opportunity has been there for him, and he seized it.
Well, I mean, that's certainly, I guess, a good explanation for why some of these guys do move that way, because it allows other players to get to a level that works for them. But on a personal level, does it ever, I don't know, obviously you watch all of it and you like it all, but does it ever bother you just a little bit that some of these guys skip you by?
No, honestly. And I'm being really honest, being a part of the Blue Jays organization, what I want to see is that the Blue Jays succeed at the major league level, and I want to see all the minor league affiliates succeeding. I'm very close with Daniel Venn and Jim Tarabocchia with Dunedin, Jim the voice and Daniel in charge of media. And in New Hampshire, Tyler Zickel, Bob Lippman, Tyler Murray. In Buffalo, Pat Malacaro and Brad Bisping. I love those guys. We correspond all the time. If they're succeeding, if they're enjoying themselves, I'm really happy for them. And I enjoy seeing the next guys come on up. So I don't take any personal offense. What I want to see, though, is as the players come up through the system, I love seeing how fertile all the guys underneath are. And so we know that Warmoth is a top draft pick. We know that Riley Adams is a top draft pick. I derive delight in seeing who's really good that nobody has heard of yet.
Well, that was actually the next thing we were going to ask you about. So you did the segue for me. Is there someone who, now that he's got that opportunity, you alluded to Kevin Smith maybe, that isn't a name right now that you expect might be a name that's on people's lips by the, you know, the midpoint of the season, something like that? Not necessarily at Lansing, but in general that's come up?
Well, let me stay in Lansing. We'll let everybody else do the talking. Joshua Palacios, for example, had a terrible first half last year, great second half, and he's hitting the baseball again with Dunedin. So I'm curious to see if that bat keeps up, how much people are going to be talking about him. But with the Lansing Lugnuts, what we've already had the chance to see just 7 days in, Samad Taylor has above average power for second baseman, big time power. And then there's Reggie Pruitt, whose game-changing speed in his center field role. Chavez Young, who has played center field and right field for a switch hitter out of the Bahamas. He has pop in his bat, and he's made magic happen. He's made several magnificent plays in the outfield, including one yesterday for the 27th out, staggering catch against the wall in deep right field to end the game and secure a win. Ryan Noda is clearly a pure hitter. He drives the baseball to all fields, and he works the pitcher. He does not expand the zone. And Casey Clemens, from his quality at bats to his defense, I love watching him. And there's Kevin Smith, who has shown great bat and pulled off a big league play at third base. The tools stand out a week in. Now the question is, who will continue to distance themselves? Like last year, Edward Olivares was terrible in April, and then the tools really stood out, and he distanced himself as the year went along. So I'm curious to see, especially once they warm up, who's cold right now and who's going to be feeling really good come May and June.
So sort of just taking that in the other direction, are there any guys that are now considered, you know, potential major leaguers in AA or AAA that when they first popped through Lansing, you didn't really see it? Such a guy that surprised you.
The guy who's in the major leagues right now that I never saw it with the Lansing Lugnuts was Aaron Loop. That's the only name that comes to mind. Guys in AA, AAA, no names really jump out to me. It's with every one of those guys, I saw those skills, and I just hope that they would keep on evolving and keep on developing. I think the Blue Jays developmental staff does a really good job. And the players that they have in the organization right now, they've got their own work ethic and the drive to make something of themselves. So there's nobody who surprises me with how they've developed right now at the AA or AAA level.
And I think we talked about this maybe a couple of years ago. I don't know if it was with you specifically, but the Blue Jays for a while seemed to have a very aggressive, maybe draft strategy that a lot of people complimented. But somehow those players seem to run into the wall a lot in the system and not develop properly. And I mean, well, obviously the amount of Blue Jays drafted position players who've come up are like Adam Lind in the past, whatever.
Kevin Pillar and Ryan Goins.
Yeah. Well, Ryan Goins, we know how that's been going so far. Kevin Pillar, kudos to him for hanging around the way he has, you know, as a very late draft pick. But generally speaking, there seemed to be something lacking in the development. And now, as the names are coming up, Bo and Vlad accepted, who were obviously, you know, sort of expected to do well, there seem to be a lot more options that the Jays are developing. Do you think there's been a change in that philosophy?
There has been very recently, although I think that this is a topic that every single year we should continue to touch on and see, okay, at the major league level, how homegrown are the Jays? And then a year from now, at the major league level, how homegrown are the Jays? Because you really do never know who's going to hit the wall or who's going to be beset by injuries, how things go. But Steve Sanders running the draft last year, what we saw is he focused on college guys. He focused on clubhouse guys. He focused on positive guys to be around who work really hard and really good guys. And even before that, the change went from, and you still see this kind of player in terms of Reggie Pruitt or Chavez Young, but I saw a lot more of the boomer bust high schooler. They still take that pick every now and then, but I'd say more than that right now, they're going with surer things, that instead of rolling the dice on a player here, rolling the dice on a player there early, they roll the dice on those players later, and they try to go for the more polished player early.
Interesting. So yeah, I guess with more polished players in the system, you see a more even progression from your higher picks is the idea.
Well, and not only that, I really think that this deserves underlining several times. The character of guys in the system has never been better. As in the people of the guys in the Blue Jays system, you can look at every single affiliate and there are some really great guys.
Cool. I think that's, yeah, we talk a lot about the unquantifiable things, and we don't have a way of measuring it, but certainly you can tell, you know, on a team whether people are getting along or helping one another out or not.
But and it's fun as a fan. If you meet Anthony Alford at a fan fest or whatever it is, you can say, this is a guy I'm really proud to root for, or Danny Jansen or Ryan Barucki, and right on down the line. It's been a pleasure for me. It's been a pleasure for everybody else working with the guys in the organization. They come in with great talent, and yet For example, I had nothing but positive relationships with a Vladdy Jr. or a Bo or other guys as they've come through. Here's this current crop of Lansing Lugnuts, and nobody is causing trouble. Nobody is someone that you say, it's great talent, but wow, you just can't have that guy around. These are team players and really good teammates.
And on that note, I would like to encourage folks who might be near the Michigan-Ontario border to take a look at dropping down into Lansing and seeing some of these people in person. Because if you are more southwestern Ontario than Toronto, it really isn't that far to go, is it?
No, it's not that far to go. And the first impression for everyone when they walk into Cooley Law School Stadium is hugely positive. I don't know what you expect from the single A level. This might not be it. We will average 5,000, 6,000 fans a game. We will draw 10,000 fans on the big nights or 11,000 fans. Our stadium surface, the field, is beautiful. And our talent is really exceptional. You come to a game 2-3 years from now, you'll be able to say, I saw that guy. Saw that guy in Lansing. I got his autograph or I met him. And now look where he is.
Sounds good. Ladies and gentlemen, Jesse Goldberg-Strassler, voice of the Lansing Lugnuts, and, well, probably doing something else to help the team out. If I know you on game day. Appreciate you joining us, as always, Jesse.
Hey, thank you for having me.
All right, have a good night. And as always, another good time with Jesse, who I admire his just unabashed optimism. I really do. Because it always seems like good things are happening in Blue Jays land when we talk to him.
I think you have to have that mindset if you're going to be working in the minor leagues, because it's all about hope, right?
Yeah. I mean, the ultimate resolution of whatever you're seeing doesn't really come until several years down the road, when hopefully a lot of those guys make the majors and get what they want.
Exactly.
So, yeah. We, of course, have questions from all of our listeners. Well, okay, some of our listeners. I guess we had questions from all of our listeners. It would be a very long podcast. Here we go.
I think we've had trouble there.
Time now to hear from our listeners.
That just seems silly.
Here are the rules. First, I ask a question, then you ask a question.
Now, how does that sound, sweetheart?
Could you repeat the question, please?
All right, so the first question actually came in even before you asked for questions. Someone was thinking deeply, and it was Luke, hashtag we want Vlad. Still not using my Bish Please hashtag, but okay. At Split Letters, is there any chance the Jays could lock up Osuna long term?
There's a chance they could do it, but given where he is in his salary structure, it would probably be very expensive.
Yeah, it's tough to know what to do with a closer who is very definitely not going to be anything other than a closer at this point, I would assume, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen some back end relievers get more money than just about any other position that's out there in baseball in free agency.
Yeah, that was pretty much why I think it's going to cost too much money, because the reliever seems to be where the most money is going. It's where all the value is. In this last offseason, a whole bunch of guys signing for $11, $12 million a year, all relievers, until late March.
Yeah, it's weird. So yes, expensive, but probably doable, and I don't know that I necessarily wouldn't do it. Tough call.
Yeah, and also, just given the drop in velocity and the workload and his past injury issues, I think I might be a little wary of doing it too.
Indeed. So, Luke had another question. Given that Bo and Vlad haven't missed a beat so far at AA, how long till they force their way back to AAA before or after the All-Star break?
Well, if they hit it, keep hitting like this, it'll be long before the All-Star break. You know, we talked about this with Jesse, right? Just two special hitters.
Well, you can't keep a 400 hitter in double A for 4 months.
It's tough. Especially when they're that good.
Yeah. And then you look at Vlad, who, again, 80, I'm not the guy who puts grades on, but nobody gets an 80 grade hit tool. And there he stands as the only 80 grade hit tool in the minor leagues, and it doesn't look like anything that's happened in the first week of the season says anything otherwise. So, yeah, I'm sure as soon as there's justification for a move that puts them in AAA, one of them will be up there. I have a feeling they're probably not going to split them apart for too long either.
No, I don't think so either.
All right, what else we got?
Comes from Sam Dowdle at Sam Dowdle. Back-to-back questions from our patrons. Thanks, guys. By season end, who will be viewed as the best off-season acquisition? Diaz, Solarte, or Grichuk?
I think because of the unfortunate injury history of Troy Tulowitzki, I think it's going to be Diaz because he's going to be the everyday player. Whereas Solarte, as valuable as he'll be, will still be more or less a bench and filling guy. And I think Grichuk he's not going to be an all-star or anything like that. And I think that's what people are going to think about when they think about replacing Jose Bautista. So it's probably not fair to Grichuk.
Yeah, I think that's true. But also, especially given where the Jays' minor league depth is, right, with all that outfield depth when they're healthy, Grichuk just isn't as important to this team. Whereas you talked about how Tulowitzki's injury sort of raises Diaz. I think it's him or Solarte, because Solarte is the better hitter. But like you said, Diaz, his role is just more important.
And now Colleen Evans, which does that make it back-to-back-to-back questions from our patrons?
It does.
Thanks for participating, guys. We love having you around. Are there any advanced stats for team base running? Colleen asks. The Blue Jays appear to have worked on their two-out base running. Seeing Melee, Smoke, and Morales go first to third when there are two out is so nice. It is nice. I totally agree.
It is nice. Yeah, there's no argument against that one. Morales lost that weight. A little swifter on the bags. So there are advanced stats. Fangraphs just does a catch-all base running stat. And Baseball Prospectus breaks it down a bit more by stolen base opportunities, extra base opportunities. You can find them just on both the stats pages for either site. Baseball Prospectus has the Blue Jays at slightly below average, and Fangraphs has them right around average. So while they're improved from last year, where they were at the bottom on both metrics, they're still not on the plus side, really, at this point.
But this is a started from the bottom story, I think. Well, it was brutal, so we'll take any improvement at this point. Ball Her asks at Baseball Her, who is specifically not a listener, but I'm going to answer the question anyway. Should I believe or nah?
Kinda. I mean, that's pretty much my answer. I think that there's enough reason to believe this team is a contender, and they're short of showing it right now. Do I think that they're a team that's going to win 67% of their games? No.
No, I think you could believe for real now that this team can hang in the league. Sort of our best case scenario. It didn't blow up the first week, and obviously, or week and a half or whatever. So that's good. There's everything that, everything you need to be there to continue, but I still don't know that they're the Yankees or the Red Sox.
Sure.
Okay, Gideon, at Gideon Turk. How has Gibby not figured out how to stagger Martin and Travis's off days?
And if you add in Josh Donaldson today, so this is actually one of my most infuriating things about John Gibbons. I don't know why, but he's done this ever since he joined the team. When he needs guys to get rest, they all rest on the same day, and it makes the offense so much worse.
He's mentioned it in a pregame scrum that it was like, well, it would probably be nice to get those guys on separate days sometime. It's like, yeah, I don't know if you know this, John, but that's actually you making that decision.
Right. Like this idea, it seems right now for sure, Martin and Travis are playing two games sit. Maybe sit Travis in game two. And therefore, they're stuck here the rest of the season.
Yeah, it just doesn't make any sense at all that you would basically toss a game into a lower win probability category by intentionally sitting two of your quote-unquote starters. I mean, does he not want to hurt Luke Melee and Yengervis Solarte's feelings by letting them know that, no, in fact, they're not as good? Sorry, not Gift and Gope or whoever. I think these guys can understand that the reason the starters are the starters is they're probably better players.
Right, and you could have made arguments before Morales got hurt that they need to get Solarte's bat in the lineup because he's just as good as, or better than Travis right now, but that's not the case. Morales is on the disabled list.
So strange. By the way, Josh Donaldson, first baseman, Very impressive. More splits.
That one was
than...
weird to me too. Like, why didn't they put Solarte at first? He actually played first base last year.
Well, I guess they asked in the dugout or on the field. I just very briefly heard Donaldson talking about it, and Donaldson said he was fine with it, and Solarte was more comfortable at third, so they let Solarte play third. And I'm like, well, in the heat of the moment, I guess you just go with whoever feels not as out of place. And I, if Josh Donaldson doesn't feel too out of place at first and he's doing the splits, well, good on him.
Sure.
Juco James at Juco James. As a 42-year-old whose pitching, quote, career, unquote, ended a few years ago due to a labrum tear, I can relate to Josh's shoulder problems. Donaldson still doesn't look right to me, and I find it amazing they haven't done a precautionary MRI. Something smells fishy. He wants your take, and I don't blame him for not caring about mine in this case.
I think they probably have done a precautionary MRI, or at least done some kind of tests to see what's wrong. The biggest difference, you know, between what I felt, and it sounds like what you probably felt, is pain and the presence of pain, which is doesn't exist for Donaldson. It doesn't hurt him to throw. He was just having issues with the strength in the arm. So it's not quite the same kind of thing. Like, we knew we were hurt, and the inflammation makes it harder to throw, whereas in his case, they did test and it wasn't. So I think it's actually okay, and he did look a lot better after coming back.
Reasonable explanation. And that, I believe, does close out the questions. Did I miss one?
Nope.
No, I got them all this time. I must be living right tonight. All right. So, one last point, and that is that Rob Manfred still hates baseball, which we don't have a funky sound effect for yet. We're working on that, but it doesn't change the fact. The latest was a article on SB Nation that... It contains a screenshot of a tablet, and there's a whole bunch of this was sent from an insider to the author, to Grant Brisby, of all the things they were going to look at to increase pace of play. Has a whole bunch of things on it, and a bunch of them have come to pass. Limitation of mound visits, time limit starting extra innings with the runners on base, the zero pitch intentional walk, changing the strike zone, a lot of things.
And he's talked about the defensive shifts being limited, which is listed in this as well.
And one of the things that I would just like to highlight is that the person who made this list, presumably at Rob Manfred's direction, put a mercy rule in there.
It's kind of funny. That theoretically, a team could invoke their own mercy rule by forfeiting, and you just lose 9-0.
Yeah, I've made that joke reference several times when the Jays are down like 11-2 or something. It's like, you know, if you walk on the field, walk off the field right now, it's only 9-0. It looks better.
Just in the box score only.
Yeah, but you've saved maybe 2 or 3 arms worth of pitchers innings, right?
Yeah. Like, yeah, rather than having your position players coming out and pitch, just end. But anyway, yeah. But the point is, like, if some of these things are still coming into play, the one that really gets to me in this list is limit the number of roster spots allocated to pitchers. If they start messing with the way you can build your roster, then Manfred should just be fired on the spot.
Well, I mean, his argument would be like in certain other sports like football, I'm assuming you can only have so many quote unquote offensive and defensive players, et cetera, et cetera. My problem.
I don't think so.
I don't know. I'm not a football fan. Someone who's a football fan, correct us. My problem with that idea is there's one set of things that are supposed to speed the game up, and then there's another set of things that are supposed to increase production on the offense so games aren't so boring. But because baseball doesn't have a clock, those two things are opposite one another. Every time you increase production on the offensive side, you make the game longer. So, as many people have pointed out, but I will outline, less relief pitchers being replaced saves you time in the replacement of the player, and then turns around and costs you time because the pitcher you left in could potentially give up a lot more runs.
Correct. Now, you're looking at this right now, right?
Yeah.
Look at the bottom one. We actually heard this talked about in spring training, or floated.
allow the manager to reset the batting lineup? Is that the one?
In the ninth inning.
Yeah. He hates baseball.
Yeah, like that.
It's no, clear.
In fairness, we don't know for sure that this came from Manfred. We should qualify this, but it sounds like it does. It did, just because of a lot of these things we've heard him at least discuss publicly. If you want the manager to reset the lineup in the ninth inning, you hate baseball. That's a fundamental change of the game.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's no point to it. There's
no.
Yeah, there's none. Other than saying, oh, I changed this about baseball. I'm fine with certain tweaks. I get it. I get limited time to warm up. These are professionals. They should have a good warm up. They shouldn't be sauntering in from the from the bullpens, etc. I don't like mound visits any more than the next guy. But there are some things that you're going to have some pretty wild unintended consequences, and you have to be careful with a sport that you're going to just wholesale make changes to that's been around for like 100 and something years. It just slow down a little bit.
We even saw evidence of this when they tried to change the rule about what was constituted holding the ball, where they put it in for about a month and then they got rid of it.
Yep. And all of the trouble they had getting a slide rule that worked. On and on it goes.
Yep.
All right. We approach the end of a podcast. And the podcast, I might add, is the beneficiary of our patrons. So at www.patreon.com/turfpod, you can become one too. We'd like to send, of course, a early season shout out to all of you people who have been loyal and patrons. Josh, would you like to run them down for me?
Yeah, now there's certain people who have donated at a level that allows them to get personal thank yous, so we're going to do that right now. Thank you very much to Ahmed El Atribi, Matt Sweeby, Sam Dattle, who we heard from, Oscar Jürgen Sandholt, Tom Mully, and Luke Porterfield, who we also heard from. And then a very, very special thanks to Deco Cuff, Dave Church, and Colleen Evans, who are going to come on the podcast at some point this season to play a little game with us, because they have donated to an even higher level. And you know, they really help us, you know, be able to keep doing this, because it takes up our time and we don't get paid for it. So we love doing it, but it's just hard to justify at points. But another thing too, we're eventually in the next couple of weeks, we're probably going to do another Extra Pellets episode as a special thanks to all of you. So if you want to hear those, just go on over, like Greg said, to patreon.com/turpod.
You will get some extra content. It is already there if you're not aware of that, but absolutely check it out. So I hand it over to you to give me your final thought for the week.
Yeah, so as I mentioned earlier, I was down in Dallas for this weekend series. I got to say, Rangers fan tears are fun. the amount of complaining when Solarte did his dance after hitting that absolute laser home run. I think it was off Jesse Chavez. But they're, act like you've been there before. Wine, 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 wine. It was fantastic. I loved it.
Yeah. It's funny because you still see Jose Bautista's name come up when Ranger fans talk about the team. And it's like, I have good and bad news for you. Good news is you're not going to have to see Jose Bautista again. Bad news is nothing you're saying is relevant to the team that you're playing against.
Yeah.
I don't know if I have an especially poignant final thought. The Rays are pretty horrible. So, just fiddling with the dials in the offseason, not the way to go about things. The Boston Red Sox are improbably good right now. So I think we're going to have to wait to see how it all shakes out. But I think the Blue Jays are probably in the best spot that we can hope for at this point. So I've been enjoying this season. I'm all for more enjoyment, even if it doesn't end in 100 wins at the end.
Amen.
And thus, we come to the end of Artificial Turf Wars, number 96, for another week. I have been Greg Wisniewski, and that means you have been Joshua Hausam at Coolhead 2010 and Joshua Hausam, respectively. Our guest, of course, was Jesse Goldberg-Strassler, at Jay Goldstrass. We thank him for joining us, as always, and we'll talk and get you so close. We'll talk at you soon next week.
Bye-bye.